What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, where we have, I guess, sort of breaking news. It feels like this has been building for some time, but Shams Charania is reporting that it is likely that Anthony Davis is going to get surgery, and that would effectively end his season. That would probably be different if the Mavericks were going to make a playoff run, but it's essentially going to end his season and end the Mavericks' hopes of trading him in season. You would, of course, assume, I would, of course, assume, we talked about how he was getting a second opinion, and apparently surgery is the way it's gonna go.
Kevin, Shams Charania has now updated that tweet.
Oh, already? From like a minute ago?
Fascinating development. The Mavericks are having renewed Davis trade talks with multiple interested teams,
what?
Sources said. If moved to a playoff contender, the return timeline could allow Davis to return during the postseason while establishing himself for the long term elsewhere.
All right. So I guess that part where I said, since they're not going to be in the playoffs, but that is interesting. So, man, that actually,
I love the quote tweet of his own tweet.
Yes.
It's like, update,
yeah,
like 8 seconds later.
Look, and they have this thing on CBS Sports called the NBA Hater Report. And Anthony Davis is leading the way, and it said they should have folded their Anthony Davis hand a long time ago while Davis is hurting his trade value and suffering with his legacy. But that is, man, that is interesting. I still wonder what that does to not the math of the contracts, because you have to make the math of the contracts work. But I wonder what that does to the rest of what they would get. You know, does that take a first round pick off the table from the Hawks? And they're like, hey, we'll just give you the package of the Kennard and KP expiring contracts. And then Risachet is the real thing that you get. So you get a young player and salary cap relief for Anthony Davis, who will be out, one would assume, the rest of the regular season, but then potentially be ready to go. Or I wonder if other NBA teams pounce and they're like, well, now the Mavericks got to be selling, what, 20 cents in the dollar or whatever, and maybe we can get that bonus jolt for the playoffs. Because it doesn't make as much sense in my mind, I guess, for the Hawks, because the Hawks are fighting to even be in the play-in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, like, without Anthony Davis, what does that really do for them? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. And so which teams? Well, I guess because, Kevin, this is now a point where the Mavs probably had pie-in-the-sky stuff with the Hawks.
Right.
And now playoff-contending teams, you might take lesser from them, or maybe it helps create a market where those can be competitive with each other for teams that are high in the playoffs. That might be a thing where
yeah.
a team feels like, hey, look, we're this one piece over. If we can add this at playoff time, that would put us in that place. We're willing to pay this to go get that championship.
Yeah.
Maybe like Milwaukee?
Look, I am I'm probably fooling myself. I am hopeful of pretty much any team who wants to take him.
L.A.?
Yeah, that's fine. And I get it. Everyone will be like, ooh, what are you trading Luka for? I get it.
The Thunder?
But at the, yeah, the Thunder have all the draft picks. I don't know if that would make
Spurs.
A whole lot of sense. Any team that exists in the NBA that can give us some combination of young players, picks, and or salary cap relief, I'm jumping at it. Because this was the time when you essentially had the deal in place. It sounds like they were in advanced negotiations with the Hawks, and that's one of the reasons the Hawks made the move off of Trae Young. And even then, even when you just needed him to stay healthy for like 2 more weeks, couldn't do it. Not only could he not do it, unfortunately, he couldn't do it to the point where he won't even be back next week. He needs surgery. I get it. I know Anthony Davis is not doing this on purpose, and I'm sure he would love to be out there, but he's not, and he can't. And so I have no idea what you're going to get for him, but if Charania is saying, hey, teams are still interested.
Yeah, I don't think you're getting the Hawks deal, right?
Yeah, that's.
I think you're now looking at another team that is in the playoffs. A couple of different teams trying to create a market with them, and then take what you can from them. The thing I don't know is, do they want pick? Do they want salary cap relief? Those are the two things that.
Right.
You're not getting both at this point, I don't think.
Yeah, that feels probably fair. And that's the thing about this whole deal, if he does still get traded, is people are going to be like, oh, I'll give you not pumped up basketball. You have to essentially match the salaries or come close enough within 15%. And by the way, the Mavericks are close enough within the second apron that, you know, they're going to need that salary to be pretty equivalent. And right now, Anthony Davis's salary is $54 million. So could you get a whole bunch of junk that adds up to $45 to $55 million? Yes, that is entirely possible. But if it's junk in which the contract expires, all right.
Yeah, usable junk's important.
Yeah, because otherwise that makes a lot of sense. Because otherwise you might be stuck with Anthony Davis at two more years and $121 million, because I know his agent's like, he would love a four-year extension for $275 million. Yeah, well, who the F is going to give him that now? But he's still under contract through next year, and then he has a player option. If he can't stay healthy, he's going to trigger his player option, and then you'd be stuck with him for 2 years, $121 million, and you can't even get him on the damn court.
Hey, teams out there, give us your usable junk.
Yes. Do you have an expiring contract? I am interested.
And don't forget, Kevin, January 29th, Mark Aguirre bobblehead day.
That's right. Man, I hope people took advantage of that last night.
Oh, I saw people. They were like, oh, you won't. I'm definitely going to get one. Yeah, that thing was awesome. Roe's awesome. He's great.
Yeah, from the 405, Thunder the F up, baby. Well, that's the thing. The Thunder have all of the picks. I would take, if the Thunder had just the worst contracts, but they maybe expired and you get some draft picks from them, hell yeah, I would do that deal. This just absolutely sucks, because when it looked like you were on the cusp of making a deal happen, he gets hurt. Now, when you're still moving closer to the trade deadline, we hear that he's going to need surgery. It would effectively end his regular season. And you're in a situation where you might maybe kind of sort of try to trade him to a team that is going to make the playoffs so they can bend you over a barrel and and give you the worst possible value so they can maybe use him in the playoffs.
Yeah.
When I'm sure he'll stay healthy with the new team.
No, he won't.
That just seems the way it works, right?
Not with him.
This absolutely sucks. Sucks. I'm sorry. We joke about needing nuanced reporting.
And you know what, Kevin? You're right. When you look at the big picture like that, it does. When you eliminate, we already screwed that over. What's the next best option? This is the next best option.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed something can happen at all. At all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, if you're the Mavericks, how is that not the decision that you're making? And do you slow down on Kyrie? But again, we talked about this yesterday. If Kyrie says he's ready to go, feels like it's probably not the best business
the report
strategy.
After All-Star break, he's like, let's rock.
It's probably not the best strategy.
We're going to go on a 28-game win streak and
slow down,
slip
buddy.
Into the playoffs.
Yeah. From the 972, this Anthony Davis sounds like the worst sports card deal ever. We're asking due to bulk to use. So, like, he's the filler card that you put around the other cards that you're actually sending.
You're like, hey, what about this Diamond Kings Chris Sabo?
Yeah.
I got a stack of them.
Yes, absolutely. So there's that. We were going to do some NFL overreaction or reality here. I guess we can quick hit a couple of those if you guys want. And you know what? I'm going to switch it up, and I'm going to start with Alec for this, because this question is directed at him.
Oh, no.
Overreaction or reality? The Patriots still haven't beaten anybody good in 3 months. So 3 months ago is when they beat the Buffalo Bills. But yeah, overreaction reality. Patriots still haven't beaten anybody good in 3 months.
reality, it's true, but I still don't.
Yes!
I don't think it means anything. I really don't. I still think they're really, really good, but they've played some awful teams, man. The Chargers
were a shell, man.
An absolute paper tiger, because you see Justin Herbert and you see, oh, the offense can put up some huge numbers. Ladd McConkey lost me a good amount of money as well, because I made a play on underdog Kevin. I took the more on his receiving yards because I remember, I'm old enough to remember when he had like 140 receiving yards in one playoff game, and then he had like 20. Yeah, so that offense was bad. That defense was eh. Yeah, they haven't played anybody good in a long time, but I don't think it matters.
Okay, Corey, overreaction reality. Patriots still haven't beaten anybody good in 3 months.
And I don't think that, I mean, we all picked the Chargers to lose that game.
Yeah.
So I think that feeling is we didn't think they were good, and the Patriots were better. I'm with you. Reality.
All right. I like it. Overreaction or reality. This should end any conversation, at least until he accomplishes anything, about Justin Herbert being a top-tier NFL quarterback.
When was the last time he was considered top-tier?
I still feel like people were pushing that this year.
He had a number of good games this year.
And I'm not saying he's not good.
Yeah. Oh. I think that's a reality right now because, and look, I can make excuses for him just like we make excuses for Dak at times. Look, man, the offensive line, that was miserable.
Agreed.
That was a miserable game for the offensive line. If you're like, oh, I don't care, I don't want to hear it, go watch it. It was bad.
I do appreciate that Herbert said I didn't play well enough.
He did not play well enough also.
And he was like, in points where we needed points, I couldn't get it done. By the way, he's the fourth quarterback this century to go winless in his first three postseason starts. But when I tell you the list, it gets progressively better. The others, Andy Dalton, Matt Ryan, and Matthew Stafford. Hey, so it could be better. Alec, this should end any conversation, at least until he accomplishes anything, about Justin Herbert being a top-tier NFL quarterback.
Reality, I'm going to be fair to start, though. Because his offensive line was super beat up this season. His weapons weren't what they should have been. I don't think they've done a necessarily great job of helping him out offensively. I think drafting Omarion Hampton was a great first step, but
and
that was not.
He got hurt.
And then he got hurt. So I don't think that was a win now thing. That was a, this is going to help him 2 or 3 years down the road. But if you just look, and here's the unfair criticism here. If you look at his body of work, he's honestly just Derek Carr with a hot and famous girlfriend. That's why we talk about him. Because he's got this mysterious aura, because he pushes away the cameras whenever they walk up to him. The social media team tries to get in his face. He's like, I'm not going to talk to you because I'm mysterious and weird. So, like, we romanticize him. We really do. He's got a famous girlfriend. Cool. What has he done in the playoffs? Nothing.
Yeah. I like that. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we will go back to the ice because it's, well, I guess it doesn't make sense to call it Breakfast at Tiffin's because it's in the afternoon now. We really screwed that up. Well, we will talk with our Dallas Stars insider, Robert Tiffin, next on The Fan.
They enter with Steele. Steele for Johnston, shoots, and he scores! Wyatt Johnston opens the scoring, his 25th goal of the season.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 through The Fan. It has been a busy day already. The Cardinals, they traded Nolan Arenado to the Diamondbacks. Sham Sharania reporting that Anthony Davis is in fact likely to have surgery, which we kind of thought would be the case, which would wipe out most, if not all, of the rest of his regular season. Then added that the Mavericks might still keep trade talks going with contender teams who would look to pick up Anthony Davis for their playoff run. and Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Chargers, has in fact been fired. Felt like the writing was on the wall for that yesterday when asked if they had the right person in place, and Harbaugh said, I don't know how to answer that right now, or something along those lines. So, lot of stuff transpiring, and we take you to the ice, the man who runs starsthoughts.com, lover of Golden Age Simpsons. It is, in fact, Robert Tiffin. Good afternoon, sir.
Hey, guys, that's the best introduction I've ever gotten. Yes!
Boom! Yes! Now, because you really sabotaged the idea of breakfast at Tiffin's by scheduling this in the afternoon. So I really feel like you put me in a tough spot there.
Yeah, I had the nerve to be out in California where they do time all weird. It's like 2 hours off for some reason. I haven't figured out why yet.
So it's still the morning there is what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. Now,
it could be breakfast at Tiffin's because that's where he is.
Good point. And you should accept that one because otherwise somebody suggested we call the segment Tiffin's Treats. Mm. And I don't know if you like that one quite as much.
I've gotten that one before. I think you guys have made the better call. But who doesn't like breakfast after all?
Hell yeah. Now, Jamie Benn is back. What does that realistically mean for the team? What's his ideal ice time? And did he, in fact, say one and done for the visor was good because he's a man and he doesn't need no nonsense visor?
Yeah. I think it's a little bit more of the latter for him.
It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
He's, you know, it's what we've seen the last couple of years. He made the joke in the playoffs the other year, I think when Wayne Gretzky was in the locker room saying, hey, I'm a checker now, so I don't score much. And that does kind of reflect his usage. He's a bottom six player who plays in the second power play sometimes if they get him out there. So his role, it's more about being the captain. It's more about being a leader. And he does still chip in. His offense this year is still probably better than you expect, given his usage. But one of the ways he leads is exactly by how he comes back from injuries like this. He's one of the only players I've ever heard refer to some sort of facial reconstruction surgery as a quick surgery, which is what he said last night. He said, it was basically, I just took a couple days off, pretty quick surgery, no big deal. And we asked him if he was going to, you know, keep sporting the visor. I imagine it was mandatory after you come back one day. He had stitches in his nose and some other repairs to parts of his face where he fell and hit the ice the other night. And he indeed said, yeah, I think that's pretty much going to be it for me. Despite what he said, my mom, I'm sure, loved me wearing it, probably my wife too. But nonetheless, Jamie Benn is going to do what Jamie Benn does. And that means probably going back to being, I think, one of only four players in the NHL still not to wear a visor.
Robert, what was it about super great and legitimate currency.biz arena that got Otter right last night?
Is that really the name of their arena?
No.
I mean, more or less. Yeah. I'll always call it Staples Center. That's just, I used to live out here for a while, and so I am a native Texan, don't worry, born in Dallas, but I did live out here for a little while, so Staples Center is what it always will be to me, but it is a weird arena. I think Stars fans have a lot of memories of very odd games out there. And I have a couple of those memories in first person. Even last night, honestly, it was kind of a little bit of a weird game, both with the called off goal and the late comeback, not getting any power plays and that empty net attempt by Steele off the post. It was a nervy one right up until the end.
That being said, Otter was, you know, Jamie Benn gave him the compliment last night, and he was like, he was the best guy, the best one on the ice. Did it feel like he was right last night a little bit?
Yeah, and he needed it too. I mean, I don't think you can really overstate what it means that Casey DeSmith started two games in a row, right? You go back three games, Jake Oettinger got pulled, and then DeSmith came in, won that big game against Washington. And then he started again in San Jose. And having a backup start two games in a row, it's one thing if they start alternating, kind of splitting 50-50 for a little run or something like that. The schedule's heavy. We all know this. But they had days off in there. That to me, was a pretty big statement by the team that they thought DeSmith was the better goalie at the moment. So for Jake Oettinger to come in and play as well as he did, especially in the second period last night, I know it was very late in Dallas for these West Coast starts, but yes, the Kings had a really big push in the second period and even a couple times in the third. So for Oettinger to hold them to one goal and get a big win for Dallas, I think that's a big statement by Oettinger that what we saw was more of a fluke and a hiccup and not some weird latent problem in his game. He's still the goalie they expect him to be and want him to be. He just needs to show he can do it game after game.
Is there any particular thing that stands out to you whenever you see that opponents have drawn 26 power plays and the Stars have 13 in the last seven games?
Yeah, it's hard when you're killing twice as many penalties as power plays that you get. One thing I did look at, a couple fans actually were commenting about this on my site the other day, and I went back and looked, and up to November 20th, the Stars were top 10 in the league in power plays. They were getting about three and a half power plays a game. Since November 21st, and I'll explain why that date means something in a moment, maybe you already remember, since November 21st, the Stars are only getting about 2.5 power plays per game. And the significance of that date is the day when Mikko Rantanen got fined for embellishment.
Interesting.
So if you're a big conspiracy theorist and you think all the referees, you know, have grudges and don't like players embarrassing them by trying to embellish to draw penalties, I'm glad we have someone present. You could argue that reputation thing, I mean, the Stars fans kind of saw it with Mason Marchman over the last few years. He also is someone who got fined for embellishment in his career, and sometimes, you know, he would bark pretty vociferously at the refs trying to draw calls, and that can kind of hurt you. So last night it was interesting because Glenn Gulladson kind of voiced some of the team's frustration, and he kind of did it half jokingly. He said, you know, I don't know what's going on. We're a pretty quiet coaching staff, and you know, all of a sudden we didn't get any power plays last night, and like you mentioned, you know, they're getting outchanced 2-1 in terms of power plays recently. So Gulladson kind of joked that, I don't know, maybe I need to start yelling more or something because we're just not getting calls. And that's kind of a soft version of what we've seen teams do in a playoff series where they really try to lean on the refs and create a public narrative that'll kind of pressure them into evening the calls out. We remember Minnesota trying to do that against the Stars a few years ago, and Pete DeBoer very much just saying, well, they're the third most penalized team in the league, so I don't know what you want. Like that, these calls are reflecting the reality. So I still hope that they'll, for the Stars' sake, you still hope that they'll even out over the course of the year. But certainly since that Rantanen embellishment penalty, the Stars have had a lot tougher time drawing calls. So we'll see if they can right the ship.
Over the years, whether it's with the Stars or across the NHL in general, how effective or how frequently do you think that, like, I'm going to be a lot louder, I'm going to be a lot more intense about voicing my concerns about the imbalance of penalties? Is that really ever effective?
I think to some extent it's true as long as you have the human element in refereeing or umpiring. I mean, you know, you'll see it in baseball, right? You want to get in his ear early, like, whoa, that's low, or okay, we better get that one too, right? You see it with balls and strikes. Even in basketball, right? You want to look for what's the standard going to be, what blocks or charges are going to be called early. And especially in soccer, you know, the World Cup's coming up, and we all know about how games can spiral quickly if some cards get handed out early. And hockey, too. In a game, I think it's a fairly big deal in a game, but playoffs are where I think it's a really big deal. You have a playoff series supervisor over every officiating supervisor over every playoff series. And so that's when I tend to see coaches really get at it a little bit in the media, where they're trying to create this narrative and public pressure that, wow, well, you know, they really got a lot in this game, so we just hope that's the same standard and everything, because referees are humans too. And if they feel like there's even a perception they're being unfair, then I think the hope by coaches and players is that just that perception will create a little bit more pressure for them to even out the calls in some way. So that could be a little bit of what Gulladson was trying to do last night.
I know these two things are obviously interconnected, and we were talking about Ottinger looking good last night. What has been your season-long overview of Ottinger during five-on-five play and then the Stars as a whole during five-on-five play?
Yeah, one thing last night that Gulladson mentioned, and I kind of think this is something important for Ottinger all season long, fighting through traffic to find pucks. Ottinger is a big goalie. He's a fair bit bigger than Casey DeSmith, but DeSmith has had the better numbers this season at 5-on-5 and otherwise. So for Ottinger, when he's at his best, he's using his size to look around players, look over players, to find pucks and be able to not just make the saves, but make the saves cleanly so that they don't lie around in, you know, every team's trying to get traffic at the net now, create scrambles, create chaos. But Ottinger, when he's at his best, is still able to find those pucks and kick him out or bat him away or snag him with his glove, whatever it takes to prevent that chaos from kind of metastasizing into something worse. So from Ottinger, when he's struggled, those rebounds have sometimes been a little bit messier, or he hasn't quite found those pucks, you know, from distance. They've kind of floated through and it's looked like, oh, he couldn't see him. And you can make an excuse for, oh, yeah, there's traffic because there is a screen. But as a goalie, you can't control if there's a screen or not, but you can control how hard you're working to look through them. And Goldson praised Ottinger for his ability to do that last night. And I do think that's a key part of Ottinger's game, especially leading up to the Olympics. I mean, if he wants to take that number one job from Connor Hellebuyck and win a gold medal with Team USA as the starter, I mean, there is no bigger motivation in any player's career than that, you would think, being the guy for your country in a best-on-best tournament. And Ottinger has the chance to do that. Hellebuyck isn't exactly having a great year, so he'll get a game in the Olympics, absolutely. They play too many games for him not to get a start, but he's got to show he can keep doing that and not let traffic, not let rebounds, not let any of those things be a problem for him. And sometimes this season he hasn't been able to do that, whereas DeSmith has dealt a lot better with the chaos, and I think that's a big part of why DeSmith got those two starts the other week.
Talk with Robert Tiffin right here on 105 Through the Fan. If you love everything he's saying in the insightfulness, starsthoughts.com. You mentioned...
I don't like to correct a guest, Kevin, but he said
no.
A little more messy. It's Messier.
Messier.
Yeah, Messier.
Yeah, it's a little Messier.
Yeah. You're the hockey guy, so we'll just leave that up to you for next time.
All right. Well, see,
okay, if we're gonna open the pun Pandora's box, we can do that. But I'll hold off for now.
I don't know if you want to do that. All right. Well, since you mentioned the Olympics, have the Olympic Committee called you up to help work on their ice and their arena at all? Because I heard it's not going well in Italy.
It depends on whom you ask. Everything that we've heard most recently is the changing rooms. I think anyone who's played like beer league hockey probably has experienced better changing rooms than that are there right now. If you have a bench.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Some concrete walls, you're probably better shape than some of the ones right now. Plumbing's still getting sorted out. I mean, you know, it's no one wants to throw around any kind of stereotypes about how construction works in different places, but I think we know even here, like getting permits and, you know, anyone who's ever tried to renovate a house.
Oh, taking on construction, huh?
It's a tough thing to do, to get all your permitting and ducks in a row, supplies, lead times, all those things. You know, who doesn't love contractors? They're wonderful people, but I think I'm trying to save you guys here.
Haven't they known they were going to have this event for like 8 years, though?
You know, yes, absolutely. And yes, there were still holes in the ice the other night, but by all accounts, the ice surface probably will be fine. There will be a place to have the hockey tournaments. The practice rink may or may not be able to have people practice on it. It'll be an adventure, but you know, Olympic hockey is always kind of Spartan at its best, so this might just be a more taking kids back to the junior days when they go out there. Maybe it'll be a fun bonding experience. That's probably how you have to spin it if you're a coach, because right now it sounds like it's going to be very, very interesting, and the ice might be basically Reunion Arena circa 1999.
Hey, that's a damn fine year, all right? So that's, yeah, that's okay.
Worked pretty well for a couple Americans I can think of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They could always just move it to supergreatandlegitimatecurrency.biz arena. That could definitely be a thing that they could do. I'm just kind of curious, what's been your take on Duchesne over the last month and a half now that he's kind of been getting back in, his footing again?
Yeah, I'm actually writing about Matt Duchesne later this week. It's a well-timed question over at D Magazine because the Stars just extended him for 4 years. After 2 years of him kind of giving him the sweetheart one-year deal, he finally said, okay, now I'd like some more security for my family. So they signed him for 4 years at $4.5 million a year, and this is the first year of that. And then, as we know, he had that concussion just in the third game of the season. It took a while for the doctors to actually be able to diagnose it as a concussion. A lot of symptoms, vision and all sorts of stuff that he's talked about just were really tough on him and one of the toughest, really, injuries of his career that he's had. So it's been a tough year for him. What I would say is the other tricky part is, in addition to coming back from that injury, and of course he got the empty net goal last night, which was, I think, a really good thing for him. Sometimes those empty netters, even if it's a pretty straightforward one, it can be kind of a get healthy thing for a player, right? Just give him a little bit of that confidence.
See, you go in the net, Robertson, yeah.
Even last year, exactly. Just boost that kind of confidence, that tiny bit. It feels good. Scorers want to score. But for Duchesne, a big thing is that he doesn't have either of the wingers that he did for those first 2 years. Mason Marchment, Tyler Seguin, and he, at times, they were the best line, not just on the team, but one of the best lines in hockey, maybe the best line in hockey for a stretch last year before Seguin went down. So to lose not only Marchment last year in the trade, but also to have Seguin go down again with his ACL injury, the Stars' lack of wing depth is kind of, I think it's actually showing up the most with Duchesne. We've seen Duchesne move up to the top line and play on the left wing with Johnston and Rantanen at times, but that hasn't really meshed into anything all that great. So Duchesne's been back on that third line in the center role, and he's had wingers last night. He had J.V. Ben, Justin Ritzkovian. He played with Adam Ernie the other night. He's had all sorts of people that they've tried to play him with just to see if they can get something going. But I think the reality is the Stars probably will need to add another winger. I asked Jim Neal about this the other day. He kind of course, as you can imagine, kept his cards to his chest. But it wouldn't shock me if the Stars try to get at least one more kind of playmaking or scoring winger by the trade deadline in early March, because I think Duchesne, as much as anyone, he's a really great playmaker and can be a strong offensive force, but he needs those other players to feed the puck too. And right now with all due respect to Jamie Benn, he's not quite the player that can do that to the level that he was, 5-6 years ago.
I know the question I'm about to ask is about a young player, and we have a really long time to figure this out. But we've gotten a lot of feedback, and I have to admit I get a little nervous thinking about Thomas Harley's contract. That's all going to be okay in the end, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's actually one I feel very confident about kind of calming the waters on, because A, we saw what Thomas Harley did, not just for, half the season last year with Miro Heiskanen out, not just in the playoffs. I mean, everyone remembers that goal to win the series against Winnipeg in overtime. But what he did at Four Nations last year for Team Canada, it got thrown right in, tough environment, and he played on a line with Drew Doughty, actually, ironically, who he faced last night in Los Angeles. And Thomas Harley looked like he belonged. That's the player he is. Those are the skills that he has. We do know he dealt with some injuries earlier this year, missed some time because of it. I asked him a week or two ago what those injuries were. He and the team have both kind of declined to elaborate. Lower body injury is all they're saying. So that, I think, could have been part of his struggles earlier in the year. And as he starts settling more, I think there's every reason to hope that we'll see the Thomas Harley as the second half of the season really starts getting going here that we saw in the first half. And hey, there's also the Olympics this year. He's going again. If he looks anything like the player he did coming back from Four Nations last year, then I think that contract he just signed is going to look like a very good one for the Stars sooner rather than later, even with the early struggles this year.
Okay, excellent. I appreciate the information. We love having you on. And for everybody listening, if you love this information, starsthoughts.com. You can also catch Robert, a frequent guest on the Spits and Suds podcast as well. Man, thank you very much for the time, good sir.
Anytime, you guys. Always enjoy it, and go get some breakfast.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about.
Robert Tiffin right here on 105.3 The Fan.
He has a little slogan to go along with his segment now. That's awesome.
Absolutely. I am very much in favor of that. Next thing we need to do, sell it. All right. So a couple of things. Yeah.
Like crypto.com would sell something? Is that what you're saying?
Man, I really like... That's off of
starsthoughts.com. That's the reason I brought it up. I thought it was really funny. He's a great writer, dude. He has personality to go into his writing too. That's important.
Absolutely. Now, a couple things before we get to playoff porridge, because neither one of these teams or these players are in the playoffs. The news that Donovan Esaraku was arrested on reckless driving charge, and then also today, Jordan Addison has been arrested for trespassing in Florida.
So when Ray Lewis said the strike needed to end because crime would go up, he was definitely talking about the players not having work.
I thought he was talking about himself at first, but could be other players as well.
This is interesting regarding Esaraku out there, especially, knowing what this team just went through. Reckless driving is concerning.
For sure.
But this does happen in Colin a lot because that's where the Star is and all that. Yeah. And there's some pretty wide open toll roads and highways out there. I mean, you got George Bush and the North Dallas Tollway there.
Yeah.
That seems to be... You've been on those.
For sure.
People drive fast.
Yes. Because they're like, I'm paying for it. Yeah. I have the right to. I don't think that's how the law feels about it. And look, this could just be a blip. I will admit I have gotten many, I know it's not exactly the same, but many speeding tickets over the years. You just always wonder, and I do not believe I've seen this attached to this case yet or at all, is you always worry about alcohol in these situations. And
yes,
that's something that scares me just because of this team's history, but also just being a human.
Kevin, I don't know if this is a post that should be like how what this should be taken as.
Okay.
But Anthony Davis has taken to Twitter.
Oh, no surgery?
Y'all better stop listening to all these lies on these apps.
Oh! No surgery?
I think what he's saying is even he's lying on Twitter. Like, is that what that means? I don't know exactly. Oh, hold on. Is there some new
news?
No,
I'm just kind of blown away by the idea that, like, let me ask you this.
The last time he tweeted was in July.
Okay.
And it said, we have a fight, UFC 318.
Oh, okay. Well,
now he's gone to Twitter to say, hey, stop believing the lies.
Okay. Would you respect him, the reporters, everyone more in the game, if then he had the surgery in a few days and he came back on Twitter and he goes, never mind, that initial report was correct by Shams. I did, in fact, need surgery.
Maybe so. Maybe. Okay. Yeah. Look, man, we know this. The retraction never gets the love that it deserves.
Sure, sure. No, I understand that. And I will say what that leads me to potentially believe is that maybe they're still seeking out opinions and that surgery is not a foregone conclusion. At least that's what the player says. And so that feels like a pretty good source right there.
There you go.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Alec, can you give me cut number 5? Because I want to do some playoff porridge.
Sky Moore again, a little trickery. Oh, Juwan Jennings, who's thrown it before. Going deep, McCaffrey. Oh. He's got it. Touchdown, 49ers.
All right. We've got all kinds of options for every single one of the playoff games now that the wild card round has been completed. Which game would you like to start with, and will you please pick Packers-Bears?
Alec, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling this Packers-Bears.
I've heard that there might be some intriguing things about that game. I don't know where I heard it from, but
thank you very much for going along with that. Now, this was the largest playoff comeback in Bears history. They were down at 1 point, 21-3, so down by 18 points. Largest comeback in playoff history for the Bears. Also, their first playoff win in 15 years. That's incredible. Perhaps even more incredible, though. Did you know this was the first time all season the Bears had won a game without recording a takeaway on defense?
No, I didn't know that.
Which is interesting, given that Jordan Love threw all of the touchdowns and didn't have turnovers, and then the Bears were still able to win the game.
Yeah, just, you know, being sound in the game. You know, they didn't have to do anything too outlandish. They just said, we got to make stops. And stops can be just as important as turnovers if your offense does the thing that they're supposed to do with your stop. And they were able to do that, and that's how they were able to get that win, man. That is wild.
Now, I told you incredible. More incredible. Are you ready for most incredible?
Yes.
Two teams in the history of the NFL have scored at least 25 points in the fourth quarter and overtime of a playoff game to overcome a deficit of 15 points or more. The Chicago Bears in this game against the Packers.
The Cowboys.
No.
Okay.
And the Patriots in Super Bowl 51 against the Falcons. That's it. Those are the two.
So you're telling me
the Bears could win the Super Bowl.
That Stephen Jones is going to be like, you know what?
That's our guy.
That's our guy.
So Matt LaFleur.
He probably should have won that Super Bowl.
So Matt LaFleur.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to the Dallas Cowboys based on that. By the way, speaking of Matt LaFleur, he's 2-3 in the playoffs when he's the favorite. That is tied for the worst win rate among 19 coaches with at least that many such games this century. I'm not even saying to cover the spread. I'm saying to win the game. In the 5 games he's been the betting favorite, his team has won 2 of them.
He's a good
Take that for data.
Yeah!
He's a good coach. they're a good team. In his time that he's been coaching the team, they've been good. And they've had two quarterbacks that are good.
Yeah.
It's weird that they, like,
seem to be regressing.
The world that they're in, it's very similar. It's kind of similar to where the Cowboys have got floated in and out of before, where you're like, they're good.
Yeah.
But are they good enough to be at that level?
And I think,
and then you kind of go, well, you're hoping progress. You're showing regression.
Yeah.
But you're hoping progress happens. And then it kind of starts to fall all apart. You're like, it crumbles a little bit. And you're like, how do we get this back together? Let's go make a big trade for Micah Parsons.
Well, yeah. And before he went out, that looked like it was working really well. Obviously, I was going back and forth with Broadus yesterday about how Micah has continually not shown up in the playoffs, but he had a really strong season, and then to see the way that team fell off a cliff without him, you can't help but wonder what would have happened if he would have stayed healthy. All right, let's go. Give me cut number four, will you please, Alec, because I want to go to the Bills and the Jags.
First and 10. Makes the quick toss, goes down the field. Kincaid has it for the touchdown.
Now, the Buffalo Bills won that game, as you know, but the four fourth quarter lead changes were tied for the most in NFL history. So we're talking about, like, in a playoff game, if we're talking about what an exciting weekend it was, it feels like that game in the fourth quarter boils down to, like, almost peak excitement. But the fact that there might have been two other games that you thought were at least as, if not more exciting, shows how great that weekend was. Now, Trevor Lawrence has 7 career interceptions in 3 playoff games.
Okay.
I realize one of those games, he had 4 interceptions. Yeah, he had 4 interceptions in that game. They came back and won against the Chargers, but still, in his other 2 playoff games, 3 interceptions, including the one that wrapped it up for the day. Do you have concerns? Like, look, if we're going to be tough on Justin Herbert, feels like you have to ask the question, does Trevor Lawrence turn the ball over too much to be an effective playoff quarterback?
Trevor Lawrence has turned the ball over too much for me to believe that they're going to do anything better.
Okay.
Like, I really did. Dude, that was a good game. It was a good game. I expected a little more out of Liam Cohen's team, and it wasn't until the fourth quarter that they put the 14 on the board. I expected a 14 in the second or third quarter, but that didn't happen. It's a tough defense. But, yeah, Trevor Lawrence, is his maturation at that point hasn't quite gotten there where he's that clean all the time. And honestly, that team still has some limitations talent-wise that I don't think he can cost them that at all. Like, they're not the team that's good enough for him to have 2 turnovers and then be able to excel there.
For the 49ers and the Eagles, Nick Sirianni was trying to improve to 6-0 in the playoffs at home to start his career. That would have put him in the same group as Paul Brown, Kyle Shanahan, Sean Payton, Pete Carroll, Marv Levy, and Bill Belichick. But guess what? He lost.
Yeah.
But for San Francisco,
that's why he's on the misses list.
Whoops. For San Francisco, they advanced to their 29th divisional game. That is the most in NFL history. Let's go back to the Rams and the Panthers. We talked about the Rams' special teams. For most of the year, the Rams were one of the least penalized teams in the league. Keep an eye out on if that trend changes going forward. They were flagged 9 times for 83 yards. 9 times.
Yes. Yeah.
So, against the Panthers.
You know, you brought up the special teams earlier.
Yep.
Well, that might be it for them.
Agreed.
I mean, like, yeah, that could be. Even still, they 9 times and they won. But
nine
you do that against a better
times.
Opponent, that's probably not going to be beneficial to you.
And for the Chargers and Patriots, let's loop back around to them in case you missed the news. Greg Roman, the OC, out for the Chargers. But if you're a Patriots player, how fired up do you get when Mike Vrabel is just getting fired up with a player? He takes a hit to the a helmet hit to his face, and he's bleeding, and they're about to win a playoff game. Does that make you want to run through a wall for that fella?
Yes. Also, it concerns me about what his next play call is. because I'm like, is he got a fat lip? Right or, now,
okay,
right?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I'm sending him to the blue tent, all sorts. How many times has the coach gone to the blue tent this year, by the way? That's a question. Whoa. Aside from Dable. I know Dable went that one time and stuck his head in there and shouldn't
but
have.
But you're
been.
Saying for like coach injury.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we got to take the coach to the blue tent real quick to like check in on him. But yeah, no, that does remind me of the Harbaugh story where he was like, I want your blood on me. And then the player came over and was like, look, I'm bleeding, coach. And he like smeared it on his own face. And they was like, this player was like, that's the most effed up thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And
but if you're an opponent and you saw that, wouldn't you be like, oh, no.
Oh, crap. Yeah. It's
we're going to lose.
It's like I look across the line and I see a bunch of players. They got Alka-Seltzer mouth, you know?
Yes.
I'm scared.
By the way, if you looked at Vrabel, he looked like that was his favorite time of the game.
Yes, it was.
Not all the winning, but when he got hit and started to bleed, he was like, now that's football.
Dude, because those guys that play at that level, like you miss that. I mean, just look at the dudes that are on TV still. They're in fantastic shape because they working out is their way to do that. He experienced that life one more time with that moment of being like, yeah, I know it hurts. But it feels so good.
We're the KNC masterpiece.
Mm, right in the noggin, dude.
Right here on 105.3 The Fan, I suppose. Coming up next, well, more of that, because it's time for the Seahawks starring Corey Majors.
Got some fun audio for you, but also some level of concern. Next on The Fan.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.